The time is January 1998, where we have Detective John Hobbs, played by Denzel Washington, who is a confident detective who thinks he's put a notorious serial killer, Edgar Reese, to rest, until a sinister force makes it clear that the execution was only the beginning. From a new string of murders to strangers suddenly humming, "Time is on my side," Hobb realizes he isn't just chasing a murderer, but something far older, something far more powerful, something not of this world, and far deadlier. Hobbs begins to realize that Edgar Reese is still present in this world and jumping from body to body with every touch, sending a message with every kill he makes. Hobbs now has to second-guess every handshake, every casual passerby, and even his own partner and family. This week on Back to the Balcony, we cover 1998's Fallen.
Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, two titans of cinematic review. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong, but always captivating. Your hosts Antonio of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast and Justin Henson of the Movie Wire are here to take you back to the balcony.
So, this is one of those movies I haven't seen in over a decade, and I remember its release. I saw it in the theater, and it's one of those that surprised me in shock factor of the almost originality and almost a taboo element as an adolescent, where you know my love of John Goodman. I love Denzel Washington. These are two are a match made in heaven, and I loved it then. But then comes the rewatch, and here it goes. We see a lot of flaws, but the inner child of me can't say I hate this movie. I like it, but it is with dramatic flaws. And it mainly comes down to just poor direction and poor editing to an extent where it just loses engagement on the behind the scenes. Nothing wrong with the performances, nothing wrong with the idea, but it is a heavy load and a heavy story to take on to some filmmakers that just don't know how to push it forward. So I don't know. We've never talked about Fallen. So what are your thoughts?
So this might be my least favorite movie that we've done on the show so far. And we've done Galaxina. Dude, I've always hated this movie. I was saying offline, like 1997, 98, 99, like those were my three big years of movies in the theater. Cause I had like all these free periods. We'd go slack school, go to the local dollar theater, watch all these movies. So I think I've seen more movies in the theater in that 3 year block than any other time of my life. And I remembered this trailer with the Rolling Stones, "Time's on My Side," and us just laughing our balls off. Like, is that the whole plot of the movie? Is that this demon sings, "Time is on my side"? And we didn't watch this in the theater because we thought it was too stupid looking. But we did rent it, and it was. But here's the thing. It's not even that it's stupid. I don't think stupid is the right word, right? This movie is boring as fuck. Like, this movie is so goddamn dull for what the premise is. It just takes its sweet-ass time to get anything done. And Denzel might be at his least interesting in this film, and the fact that he also had like a record payday at this point for this movie, I was looking, Justin, I promise you, I was looking for some redemption in this movie, and I think my despise for it just grew deeper and deeper as the movie kept going along. I have never paused or taken a break from a film that we've done on this show. I know that's something you like to do where you're like, I gotta get a bourbon, I gotta hit pause, I gotta come back to it tomorrow. I've watched all of our films from start to finish, sometimes twice. This one, I had to pause. I had to take a break because it's just that goddamn dull for such an interesting concept, like you said. Like, the concept is interesting, but there's so much, as I'm going to say what we hear in the government these days, there's so much fraud, waste, and abuse in this movie that I have a hard time giving it a pass.
I don't really have a defense of it, but if I were to say and go to battle with this movie, this is a movie you see based on the love of the actors, based on hopeful of the performances. And you know what? seeing John Goodman and Denzel Washington is the driver of this movie, because I love their on-screen presence. Is entertaining enough for me? Does it justify it a good movie? Absolutely not. Because I think this one had such a big idea and nobody knows how to execute it. And it's prominent here when you said it. Denzel Washington, and I agree, is uninteresting here because you know they have to put a stick of gum at every point on the screen for him to do something. He has to chew gum just to make him engaging in the performance almost, to have him really relate to this cop, confident cop. And apparently you chew gum, you have your jawline that strengthens. That's my only justification here, is the performance.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because what it reminded me of is it reminds me of in the CSI Miami, anytime that David Caruso has a line, he would like either take off his glasses or put on his glasses. Every time Denzel whips out that stick of gum, I'm like, oh, he's doing his Caruso moment.
I think this was just such a big idea with lack of execution, because during my rewatch, I was getting annoyed as fuck. And this is where I think it really shows the weakness of the filmmakers of to show perspective of our demon, if you will, where it has to go a knee on with shaking the camera to show a point of view. And that is just stupid. Like, it has its moments, like where I really think this should have gone in the direction where we have a moment where we have a character running from a crowd, and we see Reese touch a shoulder after shoulder chasing it instead of taking one singular character running after her. I think there are moments here where it has some good ideas, but we never bank on those good ideas. We never follow through with those good ideas. We always get the stupid, lazy shots of the perspective of the killer in a neon setting of just shaking the camera. And I think that is what detaches me from this movie. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be the contrarian here, is I don't think I found it as dull as you did, because again, you're going to watch this movie based on the talent on screen. It solely banks on the on-screen likability, and it's very, very hard when you see John Goodman or Denzel Washington, even in a lazy role, not to be engaged because of the likability factor. So it's not a good movie, but I will defend the performances of on-screen likability, not overall performance. But John Goodman does give a good performance here, given his range when it comes to a serious serial killer role.
Well, see, and I think John Goodman's totally wasted in this movie. I feel like he had to like show some restraint until he starts singing the song at the end when he is possessed. But James Gandolfini, wasted. Thank God a year from this point, he would have Tony Soprano, wouldn't have to worry anymore. Donald Sutherland, wasted. Elias Koteas, wasted. How do you have possibly the most fascinating, entertaining performer in this movie have like 2 minutes of screen time and then nothing? Like, it's such a false flag. And Beth Davids is a good actress, but her character is so just one note stereotypical. It's the theologist. It's the scientist that knows everything, blah, blah, blah. Will there be a love interest? Who cares? Because nothing matters in this movie. That's like the mortal sin this commits, and this commits so many mortal sins. So, okay, let me platform my rant off of this. They mention it in the critique at the end, and they're not wrong. Like, this definitely suffers from the idea of like, okay, it's the mid to late 90s. We have to have a serial killer movie. We have to have a Just Cause or a Primal Fear or a Seven type movie. But we also have to be millennia end of days adjacent. So End of Days and Stigmata and this, where we have to have demons and bring theology and end of the world bullshit into it. And I see why they thought that combining those two things, the late 90s craze of serial killer movies and then the late 90s craze of End of Days movies, and put them together, which should work on paper, but it doesn't, right? It doesn't have the humor or satire like Devil's Advocate does. It tries, but it fails. But it's also not dark enough and disturbing enough in the serial killer aspect like Seven or Primal Fear is. So I feel like it really is just trying to sell this mishmash of a story with these actors, these amazing actors that just don't have enough to do throughout the movie. It's oversaturated in its color, especially in the demon scenes, that real kind of like, let's say, choppy frame rate, handheld kind of swishing the camera around. It's like, I don't need that. I don't like it. And I knew I was in trouble because I remembered the opening credits where it's like the mist of the gas chamber forms the titles. And I was like, go fuck yourself, movie. Like, I was already done with it in the first 5 minutes.
Well, this one, because I'm a huge fan of Primal Fear, I think that was done. And it's by the same director of Gregory Hoblit here.
I know, and it's such a good movie. That's why it pisses me off.
It is. But I think where the breakdown was with our writer Kazan, who tends to overcomplicate it. And we saw that.
Yeah, he did Dream Lover. He definitely knows how to overcomplicate it.
The natural emotion or the stakes on hand, the premise is interesting enough, but then it becomes very wordy. And this movie is very wordy, where we have a serial killer on the loose, we have all these stakes, we have a demon that's inhabiting bodies, but we spend most of the movie talking things out. And to your point, I 100% agree that Sutherland is wasted, Goodman is wasted. I wish that final, 10, 15 minutes of them three almost interacting would have been half of the movie, because the performances we can tell could have been something more. Sutherland, at this point, we have almost a moment where we really are engaged. It's probably the best moment of the movie, where we really do question who this man is and who he's rooting for. And it's the most in-depth character analysis that we have. I wish we would have gotten that throughout. It is completely wasted. The talent here is never recognized by our director. And, you know, it's one thing that I've stated before is the real true test of a director is to see where the talent can take this movie, where you can tell that the dialogue is limp. So where do we pivot? We pivot by adding in. We improvise. We take more screen time to some solid performances. We have our performances ask more questions to the audience. And that never happens here. We have this idea of a demon that can possess and go over every other body, but it's never truly explored because everybody's just sitting on their ass talking. So this is it. I think we go back to where we even take Hobbs's brother, where he is killed in the bed, and we sympathize with the idea of death. But that is another piece that's wasted because it's just brief conversation where we don't build that emotional relationship. We don't build that emotional chemistry between the two. So when it comes to the point where Hobbs' brother dies, it's just like, that sucks.
Yeah, nothing happens. He just goes back to work.
Yeah. So there's nothing from Denzel, and it's a disappointing moment. But I don't fault Denzel for that. I fault the director and the writer. So this movie could have been something, but it's almost like it banks on the gimmick that you spoke to in the trailer, that time is on my side, the song. It's a marketing piece of it that when somebody sings that song, we know he's possessed. But even that's not consistent throughout the movie. So I don't see the cat at the end singing that song. So where do we go from there?
Oh, so, spoilers. Fucking well, cat.
My man. Bad. My bad. Another animal possessed.
What's the other mortal sin that this movie commits?
I would say the mortal. Are you talking cinematic mortal sin or just moral sin?
What's the mortal sin that this movie commits that you probably think you, if you know me, you'll know that I hate more than anything?
If I were to say, I would say the lingering question of a movie that's pointless, that leads to nowhere, that ends on a cliffhanger, that is going to leave an audience in a mere potential thought, but no thought at all.
I mean, you're kind of close. That's definitely the second one, because I was going to say it does an L.A. Confidential type ending, like it's trying to rip off that with the Mexican standoff, essentially, at the end, blee, blue, blah. No, what does this movie have that it definitely didn't need that pisses me off more than anything? It has a goddamn character narration throughout the whole thing. Denzel does the fucking most boring Blade Runner Harrison Ford, I don't want to be here narration throughout this movie that doesn't need to be there. it adds zero to it. If anything, it's trying to be like Sunset Boulevard, where it's like, hey, this is how I died, right? And he's got this jazzy inflection to it. Go fuck yourself, movie. Like, it doesn't need that. And I forgot about it. I remembered some of the shitty things from this movie from, like, whatever, the 20-something years ago that I first saw it and last saw it, I should say. But I forgot about the narration, and it pissed me off. And it especially pissed me off after the climax where he keeps on talking from the spirit world. And it's just like, how cliche can you possibly be? He may as well have been laying face down in a swimming pool. It may as well have been Sunset Boulevard.
Well, what I think our writer Kazan was really trying to do, if I were to picture a movie that I really wanted, if I were to go that route, is to create a new war kind of religious possession movie that really did have a different setting in mind, a different kind of pacing in mind. But here, this is opposite from what we talked about last week, where it goes against the current. This one really goes all in on just the idea, but it doesn't do anything with it. It just sticks to the dialogue. It just sticks to the talent on screen. This would have been an interesting movie if it went literally in a different, maybe time, different setting, and had that narration where we can tell this one wanted to be a detective story. The dialogue shows this wanted to be a detective story. The tone shows this wanted to be a detective story. The characters are talking like detectives or investigators from the 40s and 50s, especially as you spoke to the narration. So,
yep.
But Hoblet doesn't take that route. It's cheap. It's straightforward. There's no new ideas put to the screen. And that's the most irritating piece of it, is in the beginning, I was defending the movie, but I was more defending our characters and the on-screen presence. And that's not how we should defend a movie, given it's entertaining watching the characters we love on screen, but it's more frustrating seeing the true potential of what this movie could have been.
Yeah, you read my mind and you literally stole the words out of my mouth. It's like, okay, the way this movie plays, first of all, the setting, the environment is so dull, just like wintry white city. And I get it. They're doing it so the contrast of the demon POV is more stark and upsetting. But this movie should have been 1950s New Orleans, right? Problem is, we kind of already got that with Angel Heart. Okay, I get it, right? But it still would have worked. It should have had like a voodoo element. It should have been dark and sweaty and dingy. That would have added to, like you said, the noir element that it wanted. It would have added to the Sunset Boulevard narration that it has, and it wouldn't have felt so just off. Like, the movie just feels off to me. And that's like its biggest sin, is like there are so many things they could have done to make it better. But I think the problem was they spent $15 million on Denzel, and so they had to kind of cut costs everywhere else.
Well, I think what would have made this in a direction, if I were to nitpick, make it black and white so we at least know what we're expecting when it comes to the kind of dull, the smoky atmosphere, the dark tones, John Goodman smoking in a police precinct, whatever it may be. Would that have fixed the movie? No, but it would have set a little bit of expectation based on where this tone is trying to balance, and it would have gotten rid of the fucking stupid neon point of view that I swear to God, after the rewatch, I did press pause and said, what the fuck? This it happened so many times where it almost felt like our director didn't know how to perceive or how to output our main villain, where it's overcomplicated. This is a simplistic story. You can tell with our writer, they wanted this to be a dialogue-driven movie, and our director said, hell no, we're going to make this a Seven copycat, where we are going to have some visuals, we're going to have some editing, we're going to have some grimy tones that's going to be mirrored to Primal Fear or Seven. That's not what this movie was. This is an opposite to what our writer probably envisioned. We can almost tell our writer wanted to go to kind of a unique feel to it, but the vision is so off that it's so off-putting that you don't want to follow these characters.
I think the gimmick of the demon going from body to body to body, and I'm not saying that the actors that portrayed the possessed are bad. Like, I think there's some good, but there's also just like very lazy, just one note delivery of that. What I would have loved to have seen, here I am trying to fix this movie. I would have loved to have seen something like, let's say, what Exorcist 3 did, right? Where it's Karis in the cell, but you're seeing Dorif as the character throughout the whole movie, right? Like, Codius is such a good actor in this. I would have loved to have, like, seen, okay, yes, they've touched the person, and now it's in him, but when he turns around and sees him, he's seeing Codius instead of just a person. We, the audience, know that it is just another person, but Hob is so connected to this killer that he should be seeing Elias Codius. Like, that would have changed a whole lot for me. Or like in The First Power with Lou Diamond Phillips, right? Where it's Jeffrey Kolber the whole time. I think that is what bugged me with this movie, is that you take away the balls of the villain by making it just this spirit, this demon that just possesses a lot of people. You don't connect to the villain. And if you really want a strong villain, you have to connect to it, right? And having a face and a voice to connect to, I think would have made it so much better, because that builds the tension and the suspense, but it also builds the stakes between your hero and your villain. And that's the problem with this movie.
Well, I think you nailed it. And even when we get to where he first starts to transfer bodies, we get, what, two, maybe three murders that are really focused on, where we get hints of the murder, and then it's like a reversal where, okay, so this guy that died, I just saw this guy.
Right.
He's
toying with me.
He's toying with me. And then it just goes in a complete different direction, where it's just body after body after body, where right. We don't know who it is, where we miss the most interesting piece of it. I think the most screen time that we get is with the female that actually goes against him when he shoots that school teacher, where that piece of it is also interesting, where you go to different witnesses to kind of corrupt this cop. So there are elements here that are so segmented where it's just inserting things to insert things of just mere ideas. Focus on one thing. So even if we were, again, to fix this movie, take out all the side pieces of it, focus on the serial killer and focus on framing the cop. I mean, that would have been interesting enough, but it just gives us mere glimpses of what this demon can do. It shows off. It's almost like we're showing off the idea, but never fulfilling a great complexity of what this idea can be. So I think, again, it overcomplicates itself on some great ideas that are so in your face. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Now I want to see the Fallen sequel where it's just the cat going around and possessing people. I think that'd be more interesting what this is.
With the dog and the Ferrari. Got it.
I got to tell you, I was so nervous about what they were going to say in this critique. I was like, please, guys, please. You surprised me and you made me love you guys even more with your review of The Hidden and how much you liked it. Please don't let me down with Fallen. Let's hear what they have to say about it.
Back of a serial killer. What else these days? In Fallen, yet another trip down multiple murder lane. A special gimmick here, and every movie in the Serial Killer of the Month Club has to have a gimmick, is that the killer was previously caught by Washington and executed, but really what inhabits the killer is the spirit of the devil in the form of a fallen angel. But then Fallen gets tired, and we get a hackneyed plot in which Washington himself, and not the serial killer, becomes a suspect in a couple of new murders. Now, I've railed against serial killer movies many times on this program recently, and my complaints are validated by pictures like Fallen, which seems so desperate to shock and so empty of ideas, except one idea. Denzel Washington reportedly received a personal record payday for this project. I've heard as much as $15 million, so I think you were on the right track with the last picture we were talking about. Here's the only one. He is the only one who benefits from Fallen.
Like, applause. That is exactly what I thought. I didn't say the word tired in my critique, but that's the best word for it. The movie gets tired halfway through, and so does the audience, as I did.
No, 100%, it does. And as we realize what the gimmick is, I think Gene kind of really nails it here, is we get a lot of talking. It gets exhausting without little action. And when the action happens, it's not interesting because it's maybe 2 to 4 minutes, maybe when something actually happens and it's back to talking. It becomes mentally exhausting. And when the dialogue is spoken, there's nothing that really resonates with us throughout the movie. There's nothing memorable. So it's almost like one of those where if you're putting on in the middle of the night and you're tired, you're not going to remember one goddamn thing about this movie. And you almost have to go back and rewatch it because you feel like you missed something because it's that dialogue heavy when it doesn't need to be.
Dude, I had to go back and read the Wikipedia for it because I was so just sedated by this movie. I was like, did I miss something? Maybe I got to go back and read the plot synopsis because I feel like I missed something because I didn't care about it at all. No, I agree with you 100%. I think that he nailed it. Now, of course, he is like being maybe a little over cynical about the serial killer of the month, right? We were having serial killer movies way before that, even way before Silence of the Lambs. It just happened to land at this moment where we had like a bunch just kind of clustered together. And most of them were pretty good, right? Like we said, Seven is good. Primal Fear is pretty good. Just Cause is pretty good. This one is not. It still plays with that supernatural element that was so popular as well. He did not mention that. Like, he did not mention, like, hey, we just had Devil's Advocate and End of Days and all these other movies that were going on, Stigmata. But also, he doesn't care about those movies, you know? So it's easy for him to forget that. Let's see what Roger has to say.
I think I liked it a little bit more than you did, Gene, although not enough to recommend it. I liked the smartness of a lot of the dialogue, and I liked the premise, which I felt was original, but I felt at the end there were just too many complications. I didn't understand him. It didn't pay off. But, you know,
it doesn't pay off.
I do want to question you on your statement that you've railed against serial killer movies. Yeah. Why don't you say you've railed against bad serial killer movies? Because there have been a lot of good ones like Seven and Silence of the Lambs, and I think it's wrong to just dismiss an entire genre.
Okay, well, I wasn't. I'll say this. I have railed against bad serial killers many times.
That's a good way to put it.
And it is a good way to put it because we're getting them also once a month. And that disturbs me that all that they do is come up with a gimmick. Two killers we had once. Now we have, and it is interesting. I mean, the idea of passing along by touch, that's a good scene.
Yeah, but we also.
But why do we have to go into the screenplay?
Okay, we'll get disaster
please
movies
let me finish.
Once a month too.
Why do we have to go into the screenplay where you say it breaks down and I say it breaks down? With the preposterous notion that Denzel Washington is the killer.
But
they're searching for
the
gimmicks.
The flaw of the movie is not that it's a serial killer movie. The flaw is that it could have been a better one.
Oh, it could have easily been a better one.
I think they're both arguing over each other to make the same point, and they just want to make it first, because they're both saying the same thing in so many ways.
Well, I think this is where I think they both kind of get it wrong, but I'm going to be on the side of Roger, is we look at genre, right? If they're putting horror movie serial killers into that, that's an unfair assessment. When we look at psychological thrillers with like Silence of the Lambs, Sevens, Primal Fear, et cetera, that is different. And I think they do make a valid point when it comes to psychological, that it seems like filmmakers at this time, given every year to 2 years, we need to do have a gimmick. We can't copycat the same thing. We crescendoed into the Seven serial killer to the Shocker ending of Primal Fear to this one. Every serial killer needs to have a gimmick, but what I think we don't understand is that history has shown serial killers need a gimmick. So I think that's an unfair assessment to it, is we have Ted Bundy, Gacy, whatever it may be. Serial killers have gimmicks. So the filmmakers and Hollywood is going to have gimmicks in their serial killers, and that's how they're going to be displayed on screen. Whether that's going to be in the psychological horror genre or if it's just going to be a slash and kill horror genre. But it seems like they're lumping these two together to make a holistic killer genre by their own individual selves. And that's an unfair assessment, because we can take a movie that does have a gimmick, but at the same time, it's real. We don't have a serial killer that matches the same gimmick. Gacy didn't have the same motive as Ted Bundy and all that. So yes, that is an unfair assessment. So that's where I'm going to be apart on these two, because there are stories to be told on character study, but here we don't have any character to study. So I get the frustration here, because we could have spent the next 30 to 45 minutes instead of the opening scene of him just going down death row of understanding who this character is. I think if we added just that one degree of difference of maybe understanding this character or having a dialogue driven scene with Denzel with our serial killer, that might have made a slight difference. It wouldn't have saved the movie, but it would have made a slight difference to actually put it in the gimmicky piece of it. But there is no gimmick here. It's just you know what? It's a serial killer, 5 minutes. Now he's a demon or a fallen angel and he's touching other bodies. So that is, in their definition, a gimmick. And that's where I think we've discussed it on this episode, that it should have been something different.
Right, because there's not enough horror to be a horror, and there's not enough detective or serial killer to be like a crime thriller. It exists in a weird, unmatched, unbalanced mesh of the two, and there's not enough of either to bring you into either genre. If you're a fan of detective movies, you're not going to like it. If you're a fan of horror movies, you're not going to like it. Like we've been saying this whole 30 minutes talking about this movie, it just doesn't play to the audience the way that it should. It should have done something more atmospheric, because it's so dull on the surface and it's so dull on the inside. And these are good performers that are just like, again, the director's fault. It's not delivering what they can do or what they should do. And when they do emote more, when they do bring more to the table, it feels off, because we've been so sedated the whole time that it becomes like something totally different. And then we don't feel like we're in the same movie. So yeah, no, I'm glad that I rewatched this, because it's been since 1999 probably that I watched this last and hated it. But I'm always up for a reevaluation. I'm always up for a reconsideration. I've been pleasantly surprised at movies that I didn't like back then that I like now, and vice versa. You know, you kind of dug it back then and you're like, oh, maybe not so much now. That's perfectly natural. I'm just glad that like 2 weeks in a row now, I feel like I'm on the same page as our critics. And I feel like I've been battling them so much over the last few months that this is actually kind of like a nice, refreshing run of episodes for us, you know? Hey, The Hidden and Fallen, I agree with both Gene and Roger. I'll take it.
100%. And you know what? The one thing I think I'm going to disagree with Gene on, if I were to reflect, is nothing taken away from this movie I think is wrong. And you know, I'll go on the stake for John Goodman, because he's so lovable. This is a one movie I think really did test him. It really did test his range, because he followed with Bringing Out the Den later down the road and getting out of that stereotypical typecasting comedy lovable guy. So I think this one did set a tone to where he's going to go in the future. So, I mean, without this movie, I don't think he would have had a solid performance that we saw as Bringing Out the Den or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So I think this one was a seedling for him to really bust out of his shell.
Dude, like one of my favorite performances of his of all time is in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Like, I thought that was such inspired casting in that role for him, because we are so used to having him be like Dan Connor, right? Or the silly dude in the Coen Brothers movies. And here he was like, oh, I'm actually scared of John Goodman now. That was pretty cool. I like that. Okay, so when it comes to the critique of our critics, hey, you know what? I gave him an A last week. I'm not as ecstatic about his review for this week, even though I agree with it. I think that they took too much time kind of talking over each other to say the same thing, that it kind of pulled away from the real experience of this week's critique. And so I'm going to give him a B on it. I like it, but it's not as solid or well thought or well delivered or passionate as the Hidden review was.
I'm kind of the same boat, but I'm going to give Roger a little bit more credit, as he kind of nailed exactly what my mindset was while watching this film as a rewatch. So he hit the nail on the head when it comes to just a lot of nothing. And I think I'm going to give him a little bit more credit compared to last week, because I think I related to this review during my rewatch versus Mr. Sci-Fi Guy from last week in the body switching movies. So I am actually going to give him a little bit more. I think I'm going to give him 3.5 stars on this one, because I think it was to the point. I think it was very descriptive, and I think it was accurate given the time that he had on air.
I mean, just really fast, we talked about offline what was on this week's episode, that this might have to be like a whole run of ours. So not only did they have to review this film, they had to do Spice World, Hard Rain, and Phantoms on top of this, and Gingerbread Man, which I actually think is a pretty good movie. But yeah, I have not listened to the rest of the episode, but I gotta know. Oh, and Star Kid, I gotta know what they thought about all those movies. Like, what a rough week for these guys.
It was a rough week, but you know what? I'm going to say probably about one of those movies is my fall asleep movie, and then the rest are pretty much ones I would agree with. But you know what? It is a rough week, and I know exactly how grumpy I can get after a week like that. So, you know, I don't blame them. I sympathize, or I should say I empathize with these guys during this week.
Well, that was a great conversation, great episode. That was two good ones in a week where I like what both these critics had to say. Now, next week, continuing on with our spooky horror month, I'm bringing another sci-fi alien film to the episode. I'm bringing Stephen Herrick's Critters, the first of the quadrilogy, I should say. And I think Critters is a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to leave it at. I have no idea what our critics think about it, so we will see. But so far, we're kind of on a roll. I wonder what they like about it. And Stephen Herrick, director of Mr. Holland's Opus, who also did this film, I think that's a hilarious conundrum right there. Is that, hey, that guy directed this film? What do you know?
Such a good director.
So anyway, thank you everyone for watching, listening. Please rate, review, give us 5 stars on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Leave us comments, reviews, suggestions. If there's a film that Siskel and Ebert covered on their show, we would love to hear your input and put it on the list. You can find me, Antonio, over at the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast at thecultworthy.com. You can find my co-host, Justin Henson, over at
themoviewire.com.
And we will see you next week.
See you next week.